Do you have the details, or can you give us an indication of what the new offer is?
Well, what the new offer seem, and I'm looking at what sort of we're looking at here at the moment, is giving a minimum rate of pay to the fire service personnel, and it seems to range from about 18,000 up to about between 27 and 31,000.
Right, much more significant than the figures I was quoting.
Yeah, and when we get that broke down to see what that actually means, what the department are saying is, look, this is the first bite of the cherry. Under the public service agreement talks that we're about to convene on probably at the end of September, start of October, that there will be a separate piece within that for the retained fire services as well. So there's a lot to play for here. And then there's the COIN report on top of that, all the recommendations that came out of that. So there's a lot of elements to this. So you have to judge them in their entirety. And when you see it written down in black and white, it's easier to say, right, what's the judgment?
Brilliant. Okay.
But the one thing I would say that's positive, and I think viewers need to understand, or listeners, sorry, is that the offer now is about going to the fire service as a national group, and that the national committee who negotiated on this took a unanimous decision last night, and that's important to understand, that they decided this was the best that could be achieved through the discussion and negotiation.
Mm.
And that's really important, the key in there. And we need to look at the details.
You have to see how far the other side is prepared to go. And when you get to a point where this is as far as you go, that sort of then reframes your decision on voting for it or not. Thanks for bearing with me, Kevin, while I confused it with the old figures. My apologies for that. But we got there in the end. Take care of yourself. Thank you very much indeed. That's Kevin McKinney. Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. We've stepped out of the studio now and into the garden, unfortunately, metaphorically, because it does seem quite pleasant out there. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre, joins us on the show right now. How are you getting on, Paul?
Not so bad, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Oh, very good, very good. Busy, busy.
Right, we are in the midst of our second summer, two decent days, but it's a funny one. I think since that spell in June, where there was talk of hosepipe bans, if you don't mind, because it didn't rain for half an hour, we haven't really had a consecutive spell of decent weather, certainly weather for going outside. I'm not sure for gardening.
Yes, no, absolutely not. I don't think there was actually in the last month hardly, there was hardly a day where it didn't rain at some point in the day, you know, because it's you have to feel sorry for farmers at the minute, not trying to get crops and stuff together.
Like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and some of them are cut and now they're getting bogged into the field and new growth coming, and it's going to have a knock-on effect. In terms of growth, has this been a good summer for growth?
It's been a good enough summer for growth, all right. Like grass,
so you're getting the colours and stuff. Still,
exactly,
yeah.
Yeah, you're getting the colours, but you haven't the degree of sunshine you really need to get the proper flowers out, if you know what I mean. But plants are growing quite well, but like I say, they're not been on as good a show as maybe they would other years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's obvious because the conditions just haven't been perfect. Now, it's going to vary depending on where you're listening to us. The Northwest is a whole batch of microclimates. But there's still plenty we can be doing on these better days, watering, feeding, weeding.
Yes, absolutely. It's nice to get, because we've been sort of out of the garden for the summer this year to a large extent. Once you get an opportunity, it's nice to get out, and there is plenty to be doing. And if you look around, like, there's plenty of tidying to be done and stuff like that. Like, just, you're getting to the stage of the year now where maybe some of your flowering plants are getting a wee bit leggy and a wee bit sort of untidy just through the season. So a wee trim at this time of the year can actually help extend the life of them.
So how do you do that?
Generally, just stand back and take a look at the plant and see if you see a bit that's growing sort of...
scraggly?
But scraggly, yes, that's the word, what I got. But but scraggly like that there. Just take a wee look and just sort of reshape it, if you know what I mean. You may lose some of the flowering plants, you may lose the flowers for a week, but hopefully then they'll reinvigorate themselves and they could flower right up to Halloween.
If we're looking now to sort of considering later in the year or next year for seeds and what have you, now's a good time to harvest seeds?
Yes, absolutely. Some plants, like a lot of your perennial plants, like your poppies, your lupins, that sort of stuff will be sort of have gone to seed because they've done their job and they've flowered up for the summer. So now's a good idea to sort of keep an eye on what seed heads are there and gather up.
So what do you do then?
Pretty much, the likes of the poppy seeds there, you have the very definite big seed head on it. Normally what you would do once it's dried out a bit is cut it off and say hang it up in your shed or something with a brown paper bag under it and the wee seeds. No, the wee seeds like you see the top of the bread.
Yep.
They'll fall down into the bag and just keep them for next year. You have a grand new supply of plants or trade them with your friends for other plants.
All right, brilliant. And cuttings as well, with an eye on next year. Late summer's a good time to take cuttings, isn't it?
Yes, and August there. So plants like your hydrangeas, that sort of stuff, or even some hedging plants, now is a good time if you're thinking of taking cuttings. Now is a perfect time to do it.
And what do you do with them?
Generally, what you would hope what you would do is just take take your cutting off the plant. Generally not a flowering part of the plant. Take about 9 inches of it or so, cut it off, take a few leaves off it and stick it in the compost and hopefully forget about it then until it performs or puts on roots.
So you plant it indoors?
No, planted in pots indoors. You can make sort of a mini greenhouse around it, but right. A lot of sort of cold weather plants like hedging plants that you can actually just sort of leave at the back of the shed or something like that.
Right, brilliant, really okay. Fruit and veg, it's still some people, you've got your spuds out because we ate some of them. Others haven't yet. There's other stuff starting to ripen and come to fruition.
Yeah, pretty much. It's still a good harvesting time. The thing we have down there, the plenty coming on there with tomatoes and stuff are actually starting to redden up now because there's been low levels of sunshine this year, so they've been very late of actually sort of ripening, if you know what I mean. But they're starting to come now, so they're so we have a right glut of them at the minute.
Yeah, and what is the situation with spuds? There's a period of time we're in the midst of it now, are we? I mean, some are still have yet to ripen a little bit.
Yeah, pretty much. You're sort of your early potatoes, sort of your queens and hungers, first and second earlies are pretty much they'd be ready from the middle of July.
Yep.
Then your main crops, the pinks and that sort of stuff, will be ready generally from about the middle of August or so. So we're sort of in transition period now. We'd be going sort of from the early potatoes down towards the main crop ones.
Should we have one eye on our last cut of the year in terms of the lawns at the moment, or should it just keep going as we were throughout the summer so far?
You would be hopeful that there'd be still a few cuts to go.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Generally, if you get the right September, you can be cutting right up into October. So I would say just keep an eye. If you think the lawn's suffering a wee bit or suffering from stress a wee bit, just click the blades a wee bit higher and just let it sort of recover a bit better rather than scalp it down into the ground.
And if you... whether you do or don't have your own garden or your own flowers, now's a good time to go and look at other people's before the end of the summer holidays.
Absolutely. It's a great time to actually just, for the last few weeks of the school holidays or whatever, like I was in Glenvay there a couple of weeks ago and it's looking brilliant.
Yeah.
Also, it's a place to get Oakfield over there. But it's great to go to these places and whereas they're sort of done on a grand scale, you can get sort of wee snippets of it or anything else.
Yeah, inspirations.
Sort of apply it to your own garden, get inspiration that way. Yeah.
Now, when you say snippets, you're not suggesting people go and start snipping the
It has been done. I've seen it been done before. People right, snipping okay. away.
All right. A caller wants to know, are there any disadvantages to using a stone or slate or gravel mulch on beds to stop weeds?
People generally use this gravel like that there. Sort of, it cuts down in maintenance and that. Once you use a proper ground cover, and other, some people use like black polythene sheeting.
But as I said to you last week, was it, or the week before, I used that and put stones on top of it and it's as weedy as it's ever been.
Yes.
The weeds are just growing amongst the stones. Now, they're not rooted and they're very easy pulled.
Yeah.
But I was away from the house for a while and couldn't believe that even with, like, in other words, there's no such thing as no maintenance.
No, no such thing as no maintenance. There's no such thing as a no maintenance garden.
They might be easy to pull, but you're going to get weeds still.
Oh, absolutely, you're going to get weeds. But suppose it's sort of aesthetically, it looks a bit better. And like you say, there is the ease of pulling the weeds. Whereas if you have a weed that has formed down into the soil, it can be very hard to remove.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but generally, if you use the proper ground cover, if you use just black polythene, that stops water passing through it. So it can be problematic. But if you use the proper ground cover, they're not much.
Right, could Paul suggest to me plants and shrubs that would grow in a rocky area that's shaded by trees? Plants that spread and don't need a lot of maintenance, please.
Yeah, rocky area and shaded. So you're going to have to keep an eye on that through the summer months until they establish that they're getting enough water, basically, because rocky ground tends to drain very quickly. But someone like Cotone Aster, Vinca, the Rubus Tricolor there, or even sort of the perennial geranium would all work quite well in them areas.
Our garden is 3 years old and was professionally landscaped 2 years ago. The problem I'm having, though, is that the lawn is very wet and never seems to dry out. In one corner, after heavy rain, a pond forms and lasts for days. What's the best way to tackle this problem and improve drainage? And is drainage, there's clearly a drainage issue there.
Yes, clearly. Chances are, if water's collecting at a certain point, it's maybe while the garden was professionally landscaped, maybe it was drained at that stage, and maybe something's happened, one of the drains like is crushed or something.
See, water will find its level too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the best thing to do would be sort of, if it has been drained, check the drains and make sure that they're working. If it hasn't been drained, obviously just sort of spend a while in a damp period and actually study it a bit and see where the water is sort of emanating
but what
from.
Would you, yeah, I mean, it's either let the water away or divert it from there in the first place. There's no other real options. It is going to be a bit of work, is it?
Absolutely. I see. It's funny, we have sort of two things around. And I go, you have like your sort of rural gardens where it's not actually that hard to drain because it's very easy to get an exit point for it and a shock or something like that. Whereas if you're in a more urban area, like in a housing estate, be very hard to actually get the water away, because there is no place that you can put, apart from divert into the storm drains or something like that, which generally involves cutting concrete and stuff like that. So just generally study it in a wet weather period, and if it is a case of collecting a point, you might have to dig that out if there are no means of getting rid of the water. Like, you just dig a very deep hole and fill it full of stones and actually make a sump there at that point where it will eventually seep away.
Okay.
Or some people, if it's, that sounds like an extreme case. If it's not such an extreme case, a bit damp, if you actually plant a bit of willow in an area like that, they have the effect of drinking a while at it. So it actually would.
But in this case, it seems it's going to take a professional solution, would you say, unless the person is incredibly handy.
Yes, I would fear so. All right. But once again, maybe drains there that are simply just blocked.
It would also be interesting to see where their gutter water and stuff is going
yes,
as well.
Yes, absolutely. I've been gardening a long time and I've seen pipes go in a lot of different directions where they naturally shouldn't be, if you know
so your
I mean.
Roof is gathering water, potentially pumping into the garden. I'm not saying it's the case here.
Quite possibly. It's generally, a lot of the thing that happens as well is people, the very big machines now, diggers and stuff, leveling gardens and bigging over the top of the thing, they have the effect of compacting.
There's no subtlety there with them, is
there
often?
No, exactly.
Okay. What bulbs or plants should I plant coming into September?
In September now, basically all your spring stuff will be available. They'll be coming into shops and garden centres in the next few weeks there. So and your daffodils, tulips, alliums are very popular at the minute. So they are, even your snowdrops or crocuses. But autumn time for bulbs and stuff is just the ideal time. Like, there are huge rains there.
All right, this crosses over with some advice from earlier on, but we'll ask the question so the answer is clear. Is it too early to do some cutting back of flowers?
Cutting back of flowers, generally any sort of shrub or that has, if it has flowered in the flowers past, cut away at it. If it's still too flower, you can cut away at it, but the fact of the matter is you're going to cut off some of your flowers. So generally, once the plant is finished flowering, you can chop away.
There's no point rushing it. You don't have to now.
No.
Really. Okay. I was thinking of getting my grandchildren involved in growing some plants, but I'm not great at it myself. What would be easiest to begin with for me and them? And when they talk about plants, wouldn't they get more fun going down maybe the vegetable route? But anyway, what do you think?
Quite possibly. All right. That sort of depends.
Can you imagine growing something though, and it, like a carrot, and then you can chop it up and eat it?
Exactly. Because a lot of the reason I got into sort of growing vegetables was from my own kids too, was actually, as well as showing them how the thing grows and everything, it actually engages them with their food and encourages them to actually eat the stuff whenever they've done it, if you know what I mean. So for something like that there, if you're lacking space or anything, like say herbs is quite a good place to start. Let them come very quickly from seed. Even like say your rocket, your basil, that sort of stuff will all come quite thing. Otherwise, if you're thinking more flowery stuff, you're getting into a perfect time, because you have your daffodils, tulips and all that coming, which you have a relatively short period. You plant them now and they'll be up in the springtime.
Yeah.
And for kids as well, bulbs are actually very big and easy to handle, so the kids can really get engaged with them, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
So if you're going flowers, probably spring bulbs are perfect.
Yeah, okay. And again, whilst we love you calling in to us, please don't be afraid to call into your local garden centre, be it Ballaghderg, where Paul is or whatever, and actually have that conversation with them, because, as I say, they're really enthusiastic and you'll get some great ideas face-to-face as well. But as I say, that's not to discourage you contacting us. What is the best time to kill off a lawn so as to reseed it next year?
Yes.
Well, would you not be sort of reseeding it towards the end of this year, no?
You still could reseed in September. Once it gets very weather dependent at that stage. That stage. But generally, if you're chatting with killing off, chatting any sort of chemical things, generally use it and you can do nothing for 3 weeks.
Right, so when's the best time to kill the lawn off?
Well, if you're going to do it in September, you could actually do it now.
So in other words, a month before you're going to
reseed
it.
Exactly, a month before you do it. But by doing it at the back end of the year, you're running into the risk of whenever it wets, it's not going to dry again. Whereas if you do it in the springtime, it's going to actually, you have still the summer ahead where it's going to eventually dry up, if you know
right.
what I mean.
So if it were you, when would you kill off the lawn and when would you reseed it?
If the weather's with you, September is a perfect time. It actually establishes over the winter and you could use it next year.
Right.
Whereas if you do it in the spring, you're not really, it's not really going to be that usable
for
the summer months, if you know what I mean.
What okay.
Generally, it's not too late to do it this year.
Right, get it, start killing now. Okay. I'm part of a community group. How do I deal with eelworm in my tomatoes and potatoes? How do I stop blight spreading from my potatoes to my tomato plants? Many thank yous.
Right, a few questions there. Generally, eelworms attacking potatoes and that sort of stuff, it's they're hard to get rid of, and especially without sort of using sort of chemical things. I was reading up actually because somebody asked me that earlier this year. But so the potato season sort of for worms that sort of has passed, if they're there and they're in them, if you know what I mean. So what you can do next year, actually, if you Google this for proper instructions, but in the soil where you're going to replant your potatoes, you get a plastic lunchbox, drill a few holes in it and fill it with porridge oats. actually bury it. And what will happen then is all the eelworms and that, because of no potato seed, will head for the porridge. And then after about a week or so, you just remove it and take it away that way. In terms of the blight, the best thing to do would be, sort of, if your potatoes have blight, remove the tops from them at this stage, because generally the tops have nearly done their work anyway, and actually take them and take them far away from the far away from the tomatoes, and hopefully that'll stop them.
Do you know what's worse than finding an eelworm in your potato?
Yeah, half one.
Half one. You're right there, babe. What are these little black wiggly things that are in houses at the moment?
It's probably the sort of, I don't know the technical term for them, probably damp worms is sort of the
I call them.
Right. Yes, no, they're not a different name for them. Pretty much at this time of year, I think they're sort of more prevalent this year because of the damp weather, if you know what I mean. But they tend to sort of go into houses, but I don't think they're doing any wild harm.
No, well, the horrible
apart from, yes, exactly, apart from...
The thing is, horrible. Though, if you've got a bright floor, you can see them.
Yes, and black carpet.
I started to grow tomatoes, but they're not maturing at all. Is it too late to rescue them, Paul?
Absolutely not, no. Like I say, are starting to sort of turn now, if you notice, only in the last week to have, just the fact that we've had a lack of sunshine. At this stage of the year, pretty much the leaves have done their work, so you could strip like 50% of the leaves off it, which will have the effect of letting the sunlight at the tomatoes themselves. In terms of, if they're mature enough and big enough, what you can do is actually bring them in, put them in a sunny windowsill, and they'll ripen, continue to ripen there.
Right, okay. I think this is our last one we've time for. I've planted apple trees. Do I pull back grass around the root, or do I put grass cuttings on them to feed them?
Right, generally we would advise not to be putting grass cuttings around plants.
Smothers them, does it?
It sort of smothers them, but it retains a lot of moisture, and the moisture lying against the trunk of the plant would tend to introduce a bit of rot and stuff like that. So what it would tend to do is sort of like mark a ring around the tree and remove it, and you could use something like bark mulch or that sort of stuff around it.
Listen, I'll stay with the apples just briefly. A lot of my small apples have fallen off. Should I leave them to create compost and rot away and feed the birds, or should I lift them?
To be honest, I would tend to lift them and take them away from the tree. You could still leave them out somewhere in the garden to feed the birds, but I would tend to take them away from the tree, because if a bird sort of, you're attracting the bird to eat the apple on the ground, and once he's eaten that, he's going to see another one up in the tree, and he's going to go for that. So I would take them maybe to another thing, or put them in your compost heap and you can use them again next year.
I have a money plant which I was given as a gift. Any advice on where to place it in the house and how much I should water it? Right, what's a money plant?
Money plant's a wee sort of, I think it's a type of a succulent. It's a wee sort of dark green glossy leaf, but it'd be very popular for house plants. So it would be, they're quite nice now, so they are. Once again, don't take a while out of care, but generally a plant like that, put it in sort of a windowsill that's not actually going to get a huge amount of sunlight, a huge amount of direct sunlight, and somewhere's not going to get too sort of frosty in the winter time.
Yeah.
And then you could actually generally get into the habit of checking it maybe twice a week to see how damp it is, but no more than once or twice a week for watering, depending on the season.
It's not a great present, is it?
Oh, we're supposed to bring money, I think. I think there's tradition attached to it.
So it's kind of got a greeny, whitey leaf, hasn't it?
Yes, okay.
It's quite pretty. Let me see if I can show the viewers who are watching here a picture of it. There it is.
But I think their tradition with it is generally you're given that, and it's supposed to bring prosperity and money with it.
So. Yeah.
So maybe you'd prefer the money than the plant.
I want to go and swim and run around naked in a money plant forest.
That's a mental picture for the viewers.
I'll just leave that one for you, Paul. You can take that home with you. Do with it what you wish. Right, Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre. That's located just down the hill from us here at the mountaintop towards Illestrin. And you can go and see Paul and the crew in there. And we encourage you to visit all your local garden centres with any questions, because they love helping people out there. Right, Paul, have a lovely one.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you later.
Right, we're joined on the programme now by programme manager with See Her Elected, Dr. Michelle Marr. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping?
Very good, Greg. I'm listening, making a list of things I need to do in my garden after listening to yourself and Paul there. And I'm off to move my money plant from its sunny position at the front door.
Well, what am I going to run through naked now, Michelle? This is just unfair. I'm sorry about that.
We'll have that discussion another time, Greg.
Sometimes you forget you're poisoning people's minds at times with some of the things I come out with. Okay. Right. Now, some workshops are upcoming on how to run in the local election starting in September 2023. We're sort of coming not to the end of, but to a crucial part of the work of a group like See Her Elected, where, you know, there's been lots of conversation to try and encourage people, lots of support to say, you know, you can do this if you want to do it. Now we're getting to the point where we want people to sort of, or you would want people to sort of start saying, right, I'm going to do this now, and I'm starting to sort of put more firmer plans in place. Is that kind of where we're at, do you think?
Well, we have actually quite a lot of women. Some of them have started back in 2021 with us, who've been working away, but it's kind of 9 months to go now. And, you know, if you're sitting on the fence, it's time to get off it and come join us. So we have we're calling it a fast track. People who started in 2021 or 2022 were able to take preparing for the local elections at a more leisurely pace. But we're accelerating things now and getting very real about this. So we have a guidebook, which kind of serves as a textbook. It's free to download from our website, or I'm happy to post a copy out for free to anyone. And then the workshops kind of follow the format of that, and it's really practical, the nuts and bolts of what you need to do. And I think what's important about our workshops, first of all, they're all online, they're all free, but also we run the same workshop on three different days of the week, but at different times, to try and fit in with women's lives, rather than saying it's at 8 o'clock on a Monday and tough if that doesn't suit you. So we have you can join us on a Monday at 8. You can also join us at 7 a.m., which is very popular at the early birds, on a Wednesday morning, or lunchtime on a Thursday. And there's 7 workshops running from that week, commencing the 18th of September right through to Christmas. And then after that, we're going to keep together online in a more kind of clinic format. But there's constant support from See Her Elected, from anyone who's thinking of doing this, but also for the women who are going to get behind them. And I think that might be kind of a little, if you thought 3 or 4 of your mates knew how elections work and what needs to go into a campaign strategy, it might just be the little push you might need to go for it yourself. And there are women, plenty of women in Donegal, who are giving this a good bit of thought. And I think I'm optimistic we're going to see Lifford looking a little bit different come next June.
Yeah, I can't see why anyone might not welcome that, to be honest with you. I think and this is no disrespect to those that are there, but the more reflective an elected body is of the population, the better, I think, for democracy and seeing all represented. And as I say, that's not doing anyone a disservice. It's a fact of life, though, we're at. Okay, so recently you've been hearing the views of women in rural Ireland preparing for next year's elections. And I think where we're at now is you're going to have a thick skin or ignore what goes on, because unfortunately we can talk about online versus in person. Maybe there's problems in both. Online has got significantly worse even since the last time I spoke to you. If you put yourself out there, you are going to have people that say stuff about you. You're going to have people that try and take you down. And that is just the way it is. Now, you can ignore it, and if you can, fair play. But you made a submission recently, or made some commentary in relation to this. So talk to us about what you've been hearing from women, and I suppose really what you believe might be able to be done, if anything.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the catalyst for this was the Cian Ciorla up in the big smoke in Dublin, Sean O'Farrell. He invited female TDs in January just to have a talk about, the rising level of threats they receive. And out of that, they decided to put together a task force. And the point of view, the purpose of this task force is to submit formal proposals on how to tackle abuse and to make sure women aren't discouraged from putting themselves forward for election. Now, to be honest with you, Greg, this part of me, when I hear about a task force or a report being commissioned, goes, oh, for God's sakes, you know, like stop talking. I think we should be on the streets about this. But, you know, look, we all have to start somewhere. But I felt that this task force, it was really important that the voices of women in rural Ireland who are preparing for the local elections, so that this wasn't all about national politicians and high profile politicians, that the women in rural Ireland got a say in this as well. So we did a survey of the women that we're supporting to run, and they had some really interesting things to say. And I suppose the first thing is women don't see it as an absolute deterrent. So they have those thick skins, and actually part of the abuse that you read about and hear about almost hardens the resolve of women, because they know that a lot of the perpetrators that are sitting there anonymously behind their keyboards are people who think women have no place in politics. And the women, and the women of the Northwest are to the fore in this. It's almost a catalyst, you know, because they know if they don't run, nothing is ever going to change. And it wasn't, so only about half of them had experienced something that they would categorize as harassment or abuse. a lot of it was very insidious, you know, the stuff that's kind of hard to call out. And it's happened to me, and I'm sure to every woman who's listening here, kind of things like not using your name. I, as a 50-something-year-old, still have to grit my teeth if somebody calls me girl or girline. So, and it happens, you know. And what that's doing, I think, is an attempt to trivialise the contribution that you're going to make. But women talked about, you know, being shouted at, being told to leave politics to men, kind of saying, what would you be doing in politics? It isn't fair to your kids. Or if they did say at a political party meeting that they were interested in being considered for the candidate and they intended putting themselves forward at the selection convention, you had the male elected councillor and a few acolytes kind of casually approaching them outside and saying, are you sure now? Because you could be splitting the vote and maybe you should just leave it to us. And, you know, this kind of insidious stuff. But there was also, of course, emails, phone calls with anything from inappropriate to intimidating messaging.
I don't know when we'll come to this point, Michelle, because, you know, we're talking about what people experience or expect to experience in politics, women. But it goes right across society. And I think there comes a point where we as a people have to decide what kind of country we want to live in. Do we accept that if you're a woman or you're going to get a certain level of abuse or you're going to have to take it or your skin's going to have to thicken up? Or do we start calling it out and make holding those views, and they are by the absolute minority, we would hope, and mostly anonymous, so outrageous that they are confined to a random Telegram channel somewhere? I just think, you know, we can't all as a collective sit back and just say, right, well, this is the way it is, because this is the world our kids and their kids are coming into here. So even outside of politics, I think we all have to get together and say, you know, there's no point being the quiet majority anymore, I don't think, either. You know, I think we really just, even beyond the politics, in any area of life, we need to sort of say, well, what country do we want for ourselves, for our children and their children? And we're at close to that point now. I think we're close to a tipping point, if not already over it.
And I think people like yourself in the media, and that's quite a clarion call you've just made there, and I'm behind you and supporting that. I, you know, when are we going to say, you know, enough of this, you know? I think political parties, certainly in what women fed back to us so that we could feed it into the task force, the political parties came out as kind of pretty critical in all of this, because a lot of that kind of insidious stuff was happening at meetings. So they were either poorly chaired, or the chair wasn't able to recognise a gender biased comment when it was hit him in the face. And I'm assuming most of the chairs would be male in that. But, you know, so I think political parties need to stop paying lip service. They talk a good talk, but are they really creating a real welcoming environment for women?
And that's going to take some leadership here, because there's an element to Turkey's voting for Christmas in all of this as well. You know what I mean? So this is, it's going to take brave and bold local leadership.
Yeah, it is. And one of the other aspects that women talked about was, you know, education being vitally important in this, you know, be that telling our young lads in a school setting that somehow that Andrew Tate isn't the hero they may think he is. And but also really kind of the valuable work of politicians, you know. So we kind of, you know, we fall into kind of a lazy, oh, sure, that useless shower across in Lifford. And, you know, and actually, do we know what they do? And I think what we try to do and see her elected is go through what a typical job of a county councillor is. And I would dare anyone to leave, see her elected politics class without some kind of, it may be grudging, but certainly an admiration for the workload of a county councillor.
And I think too, it's like a lot of things in life, you know, people shouldn't be threatened. People wanting a voice or representation is an attempt to take over. It's an attempt for equality, for fairness, for equal treatment.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and you people know, be threatened by that, but it's anyway.
Yeah,
I sound terribly woke, but it's generally held views. I'm not threatened by a more representative council. I don't feel it's going to, you know, as a heterosexual white male, you know, all of a sudden my future is over, you know?
Yeah. Well, I often wonder, would the men at Donegal stand for it if it was the other way around? If there was only four men sitting over in Lifford and a room full of women, if there had never, there's only ever been 11 women elected to Donegal County Council in total since the beginning of the state, you know, would the men at Donegal stand for that? Or would they be saying, hang on a minute, we live here too. We have a voice. We have a, something valuable to say here, you know. So it's not about women being better than men or men being better than women. It's about having a council that looks like the people it represents, with all of the valuable knowledge each and every one of us in our own wee different way has from living our lives in Donegal.
All right. Okay. So if women are interested in joining the election workshops, how do they go about doing so? And really, at what stage of the decision-making progress, Michelle, do you think they should be at?
Women themselves.
Yeah.
I think if they could join our workshop. First of all, the easiest way to find us is our website, which is seeherelected.ie, and everything, including my phone number, is there. And I'm always very happy to chat to anyone who's mulling this over. Kind of, if you're in the mulling it over, you're sitting on the fence. If you're the kind of woman who thinks somebody should do something about that, well, why not you? And that's the challenge I would say to any woman listening here today. Like, why not you? Come along, sign up for our workshops. They're free. They're online. There's a choice of days and times. I hope one of them suits you, and hear what's involved and hear about the level of support that's there for you. And then that'll set you up. It'll be late in the day, but if you're hitting the road on the 1st or 2nd of January, you still have those 5 months under your belt to make a decent fist of it. So,
all right,
that's my call to the women of Donegal.
Lovely stuff. Great to chat to you as always. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Michelle Marr, who's Programme Manager with See Her Elected. 086 60 25,000. Now, Oisin Kelly's going to be joining us shortly to mull over what seems to be speculation as it relates to whether or not Jim McGuinness could return as Donegal senior football manager. So stay tuned for that conversation. Now, just to let you know, tomorrow on Letterkenny's Main Street, we'll be broadcasting this programme live. It's at the launch of the Letterkenny Music Festival, which is also in conjunction with Letterkenny's first Pride Festival. Both committees have a jam-packed weekend of music and fun for everyone taking place this Friday, Saturday and Sunday in and around the Main Street. So we're going to be there live from 9. Friday panel with us as usual, but after that, plenty of conversation and hopefully some music and stuff. Further to that, and this is one for your diaries, and particularly if you're travelling to London or living in London. We've done it a couple of years now. We are broadcasting live from the London Irish Vintage Club on Sunday, the 3rd of September 2023, from 12 noon until 2 p.m. So it's going to be a special show. It's going to be available for you to listen on the radio, watch on your smart TVs and that as well. We'll tell you more about that close to the time. But if you're over in London, reach out to us here. Email comments at highlandradio.com or give us a call. It'd be great to chat to you when we're over there, or maybe you perform over there or have a story, a Donegal connection, anything like that there. I'd love to engage with you when we're over. So yeah, email comments at highlandradio.com. You can even contact me on my Facebook page. Maybe that's easier, or whatever. Maybe you perform or whatever and you're going to be there, or you want to have a chat to us, whichever it is. We're looking forward to being over there anyway, because I have something I think it's really important. There's no point always talking about the diaspora, and this sometimes you have to go over and see people where they are, and that's what we love doing. And it's thanks to our friend Brendan Vaughan as well, who helps facilitate that. More on that anon. I want to say hello to Nora first. Hi, Nora.
Oh, good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on, Nora? How are you feeling?
I'm okay. I'm okay today, but I had a bad experience yesterday.
Okay, tell us about it, Nora.
I was in Dublin for an infusion, a treatment which I attend every 10 weeks. It's a chemotherapy. And I go down the night before, stay with my sister, and she takes me to the hospital in the morning. Had my treatment, sit on a chair for many hours on an infusion, and then make my way into Bosaurus. I was queuing for the 2:45 bus there into Donegal. And I was first in the queue. A driver called us forward, Letterkenny, and I went to the bus, and he said, "You can't get on, you haven't booked online." And I said, "Please, I'm just coming from hospital after treatment. I have to get home." He said, "No, you're not getting on this bus. You haven't booked online."
His tone was not pleasant either, was it, Nora?
Not pleasant. If his attitude was just, you know, if a person is pleasant, he could have said, which has happened before, "I'm sorry, people that have booked online have to get on first." But no, I wasn't getting on, and that was it. So anyway, I stepped. He said, "You can go and speak to my supervisor," which I did. And the driver mightn't be good, but the supervisor was just the same.
Wow.
Anyway, I just stood by. I definitely know for a fact I'm travelling in Bus Éireann long enough. The bus wasn't half full leaving Bus Áras. But what really, the straw that broke the camel's hump was another guy came along and he hadn't booked online, so he stood by as well.
Mm.
So it came to the final call, the bus, so the final call for Letterkenny, and nobody came forward, everybody was on.
Yes.
And the guy that came definitely after me, I was first on the queue, he went to him, took him on board, completely ignored me, didn't even look at me, closed the door of the bus and away.
My word, you were treated like an animal. That's terrible. No respect.
And exactly. When I left the hospital that day, they said, just leave on your armband. My blood pressure was a bit low. Right. I had walked around the ward and that before I left to make sure I was okay.
Uh-huh.
So you'll have to go. He said, it's only €2 to book online for the next bus, which I had to do. Bus Áras isn't the nicest place to be either, if you know Bus Áras.
Yes, I do.
I just had went and had a cup of tea and had to wait for the next bus.
And there was no consideration for you having just left hospital. But I think the real sting in the tail here is this other person who also didn't appear to have booked online was taken onto the bus almost as a two-fingered salute to say, we're in charge here to you.
Yeah, you're not getting on, as he had said to me. Just from the very minute he said, you're not getting on this bus. You haven't booked online. Go and book for the next bus. It's only €2. It's not the €2, but it's just inconvenience. I just wanted to sit and get home.
Do you know, there's a big story at the moment about, it's in every paper and it seems to have been on every radio show, about an elderly couple who didn't print out the right form and they were charged €160 by Ryanair or something like that there. Everyone's talking about it. This is even more horrendous, Nora, because they must have worked out
teenager.
Okay, yeah, but they must have worked out that you were... They knew you were coming from hospital. They knew you were heading to the other end of the country. They knew you were travelling alone. And they left you stuck in Bus Áras. And not only did they not facilitate you, they made you feel... They made you feel like you were nothing, I think. I hope I'm not...
Exactly.
They made you feel like you were nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And no one should have to endure that.
So hurt. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But then come the next bus. It was a private coach we hired out. And it's the same thing. I got on that because I had booked online. And when he was ready to take off, the same supervisor was there. The driver said... 4 haven't turned up for this bus. Mm. Can I take 4 on, which were waiting like me, hadn't booked online? Oh, he said, no, just go on to the airport, which it did. And I observed that the bus left the airport with empty seats.
Wow. So the supervisor had the option to let 4 people who hadn't booked to get to the airport, and he chose to send the bus away empty.
He sent away where them 4 could have got on. Right. It left Dublin Airport with empty seats.
Wonder what Eamon Ryan thinks about that. 2 buses going where one might do. Nora, it's clear no one, least of all you, deserves the treatment that you felt. I hope you understand that we all support you and agree that you were treated horrendously. We're going to make our inquiries to Bus Éireann, but there's a serious fundamental problem there. This is not business. This is about treating people as humans and having respect for people. And I'm so sorry you were treated like this. And we're going to try and get a response from them. Just for you to have been left there to your own devices, having just left hospital in Bus Áras, and you waiting to get to the other end of the country. It's a disgrace. And Bus Éireann should hang their heads in shame for their treatment of you, Nora.
Well, there was a lady getting off in Monaghan, she was sitting in front of me and she probably heard me speak to my family about my experience.
Mm.
And she turned around and she said, I hope you feel okay. She said, this is happening every day.
It's horrendous. It's a horrendous, Nora. Okay. Well, listen, we will make our inquiries and I would love to say we could make change, but this seems to be a cultural problem in an organisation. We're talking about RTE. Well, here's a real serious issue that adjusts and affects people's lives on the everyday. Nora, thank you for your time. I hope you're feeling better today and you get a nice cuppa and you've got your feet up and you recover well from your infusion.
Okay. Thank you very much.
God bless you, Nora. Thank you so much indeed. Okay. Take care of yourself.
The 9 till noon show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union, offering low-rate holiday loans with fast approval. Apply online at letterkennycu.ie or in office today.
On this week's Business Matters, I am joined by the owners of Alexander's of Balbuffet, Joe and Tracy Alexander. So join me, Kieran O'Donnell, for Business Matters on Sunday evening after the 6 o'clock news. The Business Matters podcast is also available to download at HighlandRadio.com.
Business Matters, in association with ATU Donegal Faculty of Business. Now is the time to realise your potential by enrolling on the part-time degree in business. Only 3 years, with one evening per week on campus and another online. Open up your future by contacting the faculty office on 918-6206 or visit lyit.ie today.
It's that time of year again, back to school season. Are you ready to gear up for success? At Irwin Expert Electrical, we've got everything you need to make this school year a breeze with our back to school tech supplies. From laptops that spark creativity to tablets that unlock knowledge, we have the latest tech at unbeatable prices. Irwin Expert Electrical, Letterkenny and Buncrana.
Looking for the best place in the Northwest to get a bed or mattress? Restex Beds and Mountaintop Letterkenny has a great selection and great prices. Restex Beds has everything you need for a good night's sleep. Visit them today and sleep better tonight.
Get ready for an extraordinary summer at Manor Motors. Rev up your excitement with a brand new Opel, exclusively available at their showroom. Discover their stunning range of Opel cars and commercials during their electrifying open road event. Don't miss out on their sizzling summer offer. 4.9% finance and 3 years free servicing on selected models. Seize this perfect opportunity to secure an unbeatable deal at Manor Motors, the number one Opel destination in the Northwest.
All right, is Jimmy gonna be winning matches and games? Who's to say? Speculation is growing locally, nationally, that Jim McGuinness may be appointed as Donegal manager as soon as before the end of this month. Hey, whoever is put in there, far better they go in before the start of the championship, though that's not going to happen, but at least in the early stages of it. Our head of sport at Highland Radio, of course, is Oisin Kelly. Where's this speculation coming from, Osh?
It's been building over the last number of weeks, Greg. There's been a lot of talk about Jim McGuinness returning to Donegal ever since Aidan O'Rourke had vacated the job, and that the Donegal senior management position was vacant once again. Jim was always going to be linked with us, and then it came out in that podcast, if we remember, several months ago as well, where he said that he had extended his hand to help out with Donegal and nothing materialised off it. But once the senior management role became available or was vacant, everybody was talking about Jim McGuinness. Now, one thing about that is, now we don't know if Jim has applied for the job. Should he apply for the job, given that what he has done before, that should he be approached? But it's all Jim, which we'll say is a bit unfair, Greg, to the candidates who actually have applied for the job, because everybody's talking about Jim McGuinness. But it has grown, it's got bigger, and for whatever reason today, the national papers are talking about Jim McGuinness, as you say, returning by the end of the month. Ryan Ferry in the Donegal News is opening line, and I've it circled here, the word could accept the role of Donegal senior team manager in the coming days. Now, that would indicate to you that, right, this is very, very close here, that Jim McGuinness is on the verge of returning to be the Donegal manager. Since this broke, we've been talking to several people and numerous people this morning to try and get some sort of idea or feed if there is any substance to this. I don't think an appointment's coming in the next couple of days, because there doesn't seem to be anything concrete enough for that. And that's not taken away from Ryan and his piece this morning. Obviously, he has his sources that he feels are reliable sources. But there's just so much talk about Jim McGuinness. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
this
in
morning,
political terms, and I'm not saying any journalists are complicist in this, but in
we don't even know if the selection committee has even
of course has
talked to Jim McGuinness.
But what we do see in political terms sometimes is kite flying.
Yeah.
So you put something out there.
It's a big kite today.
It is a big kite. It's a big kite with Jim McGuinness's head on it. But you put something out there today and you see, well, what's the story? Because I'm sure Jim McGuinness would very much be interested in seeing, and I'm again not suggesting he's behind this, the lay of the land. Because as I said a little earlier in the show, we're in a very different world now to when he was last in charge in terms of social media scrutiny, fans' expectations, the structures of the game, how the game is played, the players that are available to him. It's a different world now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a completely different world. Mm. Is Jim McGuinness going to take on this role as Donegal, if this is the case and he wants the job? For Jim McGuinness to be a successful Donegal manager, to follow on from where he was previous, away from the social media and all that, Greg, just from a football point of view, what's the expectation? What's the expectation of the Donegal supporters? You won an All-Ireland, you're coming back, what are you coming back to do? That's the way they are.
And also, he knows he can't deliver next year. So if he were to be tempted back, presumably it would be a minimum 3 years that he would look
for. At the very, very least.
At the minimum.
At the very, very, he has to be given at the very least that.
What's he at the moment? I mean, I'm not mean getting into his personal life, but you know, he's been involved in
There was talk of him being involved in his most recent role, we understand, was with Down. GAA,
he's at home and involved in.
Yeah, and he was involved. Apparently, he was involved in with Down GAA in a training capacity. Obviously, he left the GAA world to go into the soccer environment. He was involved with Celtic. He then went to China. He had a spell in America. There hasn't been much on the football front. So he got all of his qualifications. He's a top graded coach.
Yeah.
So yes, he has them all. He was involved with Derry City under-19s at one stage. But where does he go next? This is another question for Jim McGuinness. If Jim McGuinness takes on the role as Donegal senior team manager for 2023, where does that leave his involvement in soccer?
What does he want back in return? Because he's going to go in there, if there are high level talks, right, he's going to go in there with a wish list in terms of support. He's, I presume, because of the level of his professionalism, certain expectations, certain resources, certain things that are done a certain way, if he is to deliver on a commitment.
Yeah, and there'll have to be, I suppose, financial backing on that front to bring all these factors together. I think with Jim McGuinness on board, with a man like that at the front, you'll have no problem getting the financial backing.
Is there an All-Ireland winning team in Donegal?
Is there an All-Ireland winning team in Donegal?
Dependent who's the manager.
Who's the manager. Like, we didn't have all our players available to us.
Mm.
Is there another Ulster in Donegal if we have all the players available?
That's not enough anymore.
Yeah. Well, it could be to a group of players.
Not to fans.
If Jim McGuinness comes back on board, are they going to be happy with just an Ulster title?
I think there could be another
Ulster if Donegal get all their players, because they're good footballers. Mm. And they haven't been too far away in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't, to be honest about it. If you go back a couple of years ago, remember extra time against Derry beat us. So if we could get our best players available, yes, there's an Ulster title. Is it an All-Ireland? I don't know. Is Jim McGuinness going to be the man in charge? Where's it going? It's all speculation at the moment, Greg. It is all speculation on social media, in the papers, national and locally.
And that is because of the status of Jim McGuinness.
Yeah, but there's nothing concrete today.
No.
That Jim McGuinness is going to take this role in the coming days.
Well, you've covered your backside in every which way.
I would love to see Jim McGuinness back.
No, of course.
But I would love to see Jim McGuinness back in the fold, back managing Donegal. But we have to wait and see.
Because I think the future managers for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, we can see them. It's the interim here. I'm not saying he'd be an interim manager, but, you know, there's a good gap for him to fill. Oisín, thanks very much.
Okay, Greg.
Oisín Kelly, head of sport there. Join us tomorrow morning from 9 on the radio. You can watch us live or in person. We're on Letterkenny's Main Street, broadcasting at the launch of the Letterkenny Music Festival, which is also in conjunction with Letterkenny's first Pride Festival. Looking forward to seeing you then. Have a lovely day.